office.
Thank you, honey. Now, again, you know, it's so easy to get up there on a platform and talk about, you know, your dog or your cat or your, you know, the farm that you were raised on or the horse that chased you down the trail. There's a lot of things easy to get up and talk about. But whether you realize it or not, until you're faced with it, talking about your God thoughts is not easy because they are so precious to you. To carry them so close in your heart, right, Greg? So close in your heart that it's really hard to get up for the first time and speak about your God feelings, about your God thoughts, and how you feel God is or how it works in your life. So tonight, yes, he's talked before in public, but never about his deep, deep feelings of God and how it works in his life. And that's our Bert.
I want to start with a God story that happened this morning. One of my students, I work with gangs in the morning, and one of my students, Jesus Rodriguez, was talking to me in English class and was speaking about one of his problems with substance abuse. And he had been straight for about 2 months, stopped smoking pot, and I said, well, that's good. But he said, no, it's not good because last night I did crystal meth. And I said, well, why? What are you going to do about it? He said, well, listen, I have to get checked tomorrow. I have to be tested tomorrow, and I really don't know what to do. Is there a way I can get it out of my system? How long does it stay in your system? And I said, probably 90 days, I'd imagine. And I said, you got to face it. I said, are you addicted to this stuff? Are you addicted to drugs? Is it a problem? Is it something you do just recreationally? And he said, I think I'm addicted. And I said, well, there's only one thing you can do. You can't do this alone. You need to pray. You need to talk to God about it. I said, you need to find a balance in your life. And he said to me, okay, but how do you pray? And I said, you just do the same thing you did right here with me. You just be honest and say you have a problem, and you'll get the help you need. And I said, tomorrow when you go and you get tested, and if it fails, you deal with it and you pay the price. But maybe you won't fail the test. Maybe there'll be a little miracle. Maybe God will spare you. And if He spares you, remember this: you got to stay straight. You got to pay Him back. Can't fall again like that, because what goes out comes back. And I think he appreciated it. He was supposed to come tonight, but he didn't show. But I told him I was going to speak a little bit about him. So that's my God story. And that song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, was my mom's favorite song. I'm going to speak a little bit about her tonight. Like the lion, remember in the movie The Wizard of Oz, tell me when it's over. That's exactly how I feel right now, looking at you guys. So without any further ado, bear with me. It's been a few years. But Millie said I was going to speak a lot about my God thoughts inside these stories, and inside my mom, and everything about my mom was God. And I hope that will shine through. I'll start with a few of my few famous quotes from a couple of my favorite people. The first one goes like this: forgiveness is the fragrance the violet sheds on the heel that has crushed it. That's from Mark Twain. Another one is, once lit, the flame of truth will never go out. Plato. Forgive me my nonsense, as I forgive the nonsense of those who think they talk sense. Robert Frost. And me. And then I wrote a poem called Destiny I'd like to share with you. All roads lead to where we are, to where we choose to be. There's no wrong roads or right one ways in life's opportunity. Every step is who we are. It's all we're meant to do. In circles, straight or back and forth, our paths are seldom few. When times arrive at dead-end trails with nothing left in sight, all the roads we walked alone we'll cross to veer us right. To lose our way is part of life and finding something new. All roads lead to where we are, to where God leads us to. Thank you. I have a sinus infection, and I apologize. So, bear with me. Tonight is special. A year ago, almost to this date, I walked in through those two front doors and entered a world where love lives. Before finding all of you and Millie, I had been through some of the toughest years of my life. I won't get into the details, but I will say that loss had placed its handprints on my soul. The emptiness I felt inside had taken me furthest from God. I was lost inside the corridors of my mind without a light or a door to turn to. I was sad, lonely, and scared. And then I found you. Tonight is also special because it is just a week shy of my mom's birthday. Though she died more than 20 years ago, she is forever in my heart and forever guiding me. And tonight I would like to make a little tribute to her and to family. My mom was the glue that held my family together. She was a small woman, but she had the power of 10,000 angels. She could light up a room just by entering it. She could, friends, family, children, strangers, all were drawn to her because of her radiant energy. She put other people first, always, and seldom complained about it. My mom gave her life to my dad, myself, and my six siblings. She was a talented writer, actress, and pianist, but gave up her dreams to help make ours come true. She was my hero, my confidant, my mirror, and my best friend. My mom's the one that got me into acting. I was, I believe, five at the time, my sister and I, and the school play at the local school, Our Lady of the Assumption, was putting on a nativity scene, and I wanted to play Jesus, but Jesus had other ideas. I got to play one of the three kings, and it was a lot of fun. I was thrilled because of the robe they gave me and the cardboard crown. And I'll tell you, I didn't have a line in that play, but when I got out there and I turned to the side and saw all those people, I was thrilled. I was thrilled. I was a bit of a ham back then, but I'd never experienced energy like that come into me. And when it was over and the applause started, I said to myself, I was hooked. I said, this is good. This is a good thing. Acceptance. I craved it, and I found an outlet. There was chosen to do a play, and I think it was grade three, and the drama teacher chose me to do a monologue, a 15-minute monologue, one-man show, and my mother was thrilled. I was scared to death. And I remember it so vividly because this woman spent so many hours going and preparing me for this play, day in, day out, in the morning, in the evenings. We go over these lines endlessly. She was a trooper, and I think she was more thrilled to doing it than I was. But when the night came to do it, she was in the front row, and invariably I messed up a few lines and had someone on the side read them out to me. And when it was said and done, I looked out into the audience and saw my mom. And I know she hadn't acted in so long or been able to do anything in so long. And the look I saw on her face, I saw she was happy. And whether I messed up a little bit or not, it made me happy. My mom was a great cook. When she married my dad, as he used to say, she couldn't boil water. She'd burn it. But within a year, she had found her passion. She used to take myself and my little sister to the grocery store. There were 7 kids in the family, and she used to take us to the grocery store and give us a little list, and we'd run around and gather up different things. And our reward were animal crackers. And to this day, in school, I swipe the animal crackers from the kids. And when we got home, she would throw most of the kids out of the kitchen, but myself. And she'd teach me how to cook. And if any of you, I think some of you have had some of my Italian, it's pretty good. My mom's favorite meatballs and her red sauce. She had the patience to sit there and show me, and you know, we'd mix the ingredients, the meat, the onions, and I'd help prep the food, and she was very patient, and I fell in love with cooking, and she also taught me how to do pots and pans, so I'm good at that as well. My mom also taught me about God. Every night, we'd go up to bed, and we'd kneel. She'd kneel with me and my sister. We were the youngest, and she'd teach me that. Now we lay me down to sleep. I pray to the Lord, so to keep prayer, and Our Father and the Hail Marys. And she was a very, not so much religious, but spiritual person. And I felt that energy when we said those prayers. I felt that energy. I felt it was the energy similar to here. You could cut it with a knife. You know, when you're in here, you can just feel it in the air. And she got me hooked on spiritualism. My mom and I also love soap operas. My brothers used to make fun of me, thought I was a little weird, but we spent many, 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 many an afternoon after school with General Hospital and all my children. And my mother, myself, and my grandmother would sit and watch, and we'd cry when it was sad, when Phil died, if anyone's that old. And when Luke and Laura got married, we were thrilled. But we couldn't stand Fridays when they cut it off at the end there and we didn't get our fix. You know, they cut it off, cliffhanger. We get annoyed. My mom loved to laugh. I used to come home, 17, 18 years old, I used to come home and my mom and dad would be up waiting to go to sleep, but they'd be reading. My dad read 2 papers a night. He was a maniac. And my mother would just sit there, and when I get in there, I'd go into the master bedroom and I'd fill them in about the crazy night I had, and they usually were very crazy. And my mom would sit there and laugh. I could make her laugh. And I enjoyed it. I could talk 45 minutes to her, and my father would finally say, "Listen, Charlie, get to sleep. I need rest." Boy, how my mom loved to laugh. I could make that woman laugh, but not always. My best friend at times became my worst enemy. You see, my mom was also an alcoholic. It was like having 2 moms, the one that I adored and the one that broke my heart. My mom was like a child in many ways, in that she was unable to deal with the grown-up world. Life made her anxious. People made her nervous. Conflict made her angry. And the sum of all this made her drink. Something in her eyes revealed to me that a piece of her went missing. At times she was overwhelmed by her own presence. Somewhere in that beauty of hers was a brokenness that couldn't be fixed. A loneliness, a sadness, a fear that was real. A type of emotional pain that grabs onto you so tightly that it eventually kills the soul and breaks up the glue that holds the family together. remember a time I was 16 years old. I was in our den watching television. And we had this huge den. It was all French glass windows that overlooked this country club and golf course in our backyard. And I heard someone out there. It was in the winter. And I looked out, and I saw my mom in the backyard, coming to the backyard. And she had a bag, a brown bag in her hand. And we had tried to stop my mom drinking for years. And sometimes we succeed for a couple months at a time. Other times it just went on and on. Anyway, I saw her put this brown bag in the charcoal grill. And I went outside to confront her. And I said, "Mom, what are you doing?" And she looked at me and she said, "Nothing. Why, son? What?" I said, "Mom, what are you doing?" "Nothing, son. What?" So I walked over to the grill and I opened it up and I took out the bottle of scotch. I said, "Mom, what are you doing?" She said, "Son, please don't tell Dad." I said, "Mom." She said, "I'd do anything. I'll give you the car. I'll give you money. I'll give you anything you want. Just please don't tell Dad." That broke my heart when your mom starts to deal with you and barter with you over alcohol. I have a lot of stories like that, but I'm not going to share any of those with you because I lost my mom. I will never forget the day that my dad told us that my mom had cancer. He spoke as though she had caught a common cold. He was a man that could think his way through anything. I honestly believe he thought he could save her. My eldest brother, Bernie, was not an optimist. Was not as optimistic. Shortly after my dad had spoken to us, Bernie flatly told me and my two brothers that Mom would be dead within the year. I remember going down my basement and crying because I didn't want anyone to see me. I was embarrassed. And I was in that basement, and it was right where my mom did all her laundry, the big laundry room. And I asked God, "How could this be? How could you take my best friend?" I was living in L.A. at the time. I moved back from L.A. and spent 6 months with my mom. It was an amazing experience meeting her for the first time in such a long time without any alcohol in her body. We spoke about We spoke about my dreams. We laughed about everything. We watched our soap operas, and we ate the crappy food from the cafeteria and wished we could still be cooking together. And as I watched my beautiful, elegant mother crumble into pieces of death's ugly puzzle, I noticed something pretty about her. She was no longer as sad, as lonely, or as scared anymore. Death, it seemed, was becoming her healer. I was with a childhood friend at my mom's favorite restaurant, waiting for our food to be served when the call came. My dad simply told me that she is gone, boy. As my friend and I drove to the hospital, my favorite song came on the radio, "Take the Long Way Home" by Supertramp. I cried, and then my friend, seeing me cry, cried along with me. It was one of the longest rides of our life. My mom had been dead only minutes. My mom had been alive only minutes earlier. She had asked my dad and my siblings to go and get something to eat from the cafeteria. Before they reached the elevator, she was gone. That was my mom, always making sure we got something to eat. As I held and kissed my mother for the last time, the nurses pulled something out from deep inside her closet. They were gifts, beautifully wrapped. Father's Day gifts. It was only a month away. But my mom wouldn't make it. Only her gifts would. It broke my father's heart. It broke all of our hearts. The glue was now gone. The night before my mom's funeral, I was an emotional mess. I was lonely, sad, and scared. How could I say goodbye to my best friend? How could I let go of the only reflection I had of myself? That night, something special happened. I asked God to help me, find my way through the pain. And then the words to say goodbye somehow found me. I read my first poem at her funeral the next day. I'd like to share it with you now. It's entitled, My Own Goodbye. I didn't get to kiss you as you took the final bow. You left to play in heaven, but forgot to show me how. My heart beats loud in silence, and my soul has gone to sleep. The echoes of your helplessness at last I cannot keep. Deep inside this emptiness are hidden thoughts of you. Somehow in the nights ahead, your love will see me through. In love we found each other. In you I found a friend. Your light will shine forever. A life that knows no end. A year ago, I was guided here to Millie and to all of you. The energy that flows here is stronger than starlight. The unity, grace, and peace among us forms a bond that can't be broken. The love that envelops this church is palpable. It's the kind of love that you meet once and live for a lifetime. A love that even words step aside to feel. A love that has allowed my soul to shine once more like the sun. The loneliness, sadness, and fear are fading. I am blessed to have been reunited on more than one occasion with my mom and dad, thanks to Millie and her wonderful classes. I am forever grateful. I have my family now, and I love each and every one of you. The glue has returned, and it is beginning to take hold. Thank you. Thank you.